Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up as a military brat and earned a BA in political science from East Carolina University. He served in the U.S. Air Force for 35 years and flew over 4,000 hours as a fighter pilot. From 2014 to 2019, he was the commander of the 127th Wing, Selfridge Air National Guard Base, and is an inductee in the U.S. Air Force Safety Hall of Fame. His name? Brigadier General Doug Slocum, affectionately known as Odie. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, a News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Brigadier General Doug Slocum. From 2014 to 2019, he was the commander of the 127th Wing, Selfridge Air National Guard Base. 2019. Doug, welcome. A real honor to have you.
It's fantastic to be here, Jack. Thank you very much.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Wow. Yes, and you use the term that I was a military brat. A lot of people probably don't know. That means I grew up as a dependent. My dad was in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot. I got to live in a lot of very interesting places. I was born in Massachusetts. We lived in Colorado, California, Utah, Texas, Germany, numerous places like that. So I got to live all over the world and see some interesting things. You know, a lot of folks would say, hey, that's why you were probably interested in going into the Air Force, but actually that's not the case at all. I was very interested in, to this day, I'm kind of fascinated with ships, but I had a greater chance of, when I went to college, of getting an Air Force scholarship, so I decided to go that way. Still fascinated with ships to this day, but that's a little bit of the background. I have an older sister, and of course, like any older sister, she tortured me and all through time, but it was a great opportunity to live in a lot of interesting places, meet a lot of great people as part of growing up, and I have fantastic parents, both very accomplished.
Speaking of which, what's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
I think biggest thing I learned from mom, I believe, would be my work ethic. She was always a very hard worker. I always kind of gave her a hard time because I think I was taller than her when I turned about 11 or 12 years old, shorter than me. But I'll be darned if she just doesn't walk faster. And that, to me, is just a characteristic of the way that she lives life, is always at a high-speed pace. And I think I kind of got that from her. From my dad, I think it would probably be the professionalism, you know, being the military officer and taking pride in the things that you do when it comes to that, or what we would call officership, the professionalism of serving in the United States military.
Serving in the U.S. Air Force,
mm-hmm.
You've flown over 4,000 hours as a fighter pilot.
Correct.
So once in a while, we see these fighter pilots, fighters way, way out there with that stream of white smoke. Talk to us about the technology of those fighter jets.
Well, you know, I got to start off when there was not a whole lot of technology to it, I guess, by today's standards. Started to fly the F-4, which, you know, is famous from the Vietnam era and Middle East wars and all. That was the first aircraft I got to fly out of pilot training. And it was my first love. What a fantastic airplane. There was not a whole lot of automated stuff in that jet. But, you know, to be able to go out and do that, to fly combat missions, to work with other people the way that it did, was just an amazing time. Go from the F-4 into the F-16, which has been in production now for decades. But to get to fly from the very first F-16 that was built to one of the latest ones rolling off their production line, and the differences over those decades, even in what we would consider the same airplane, is pretty amazing. A lot of automation, a lot of technology that's gone into that. Through the years, there's the newest things that you can do with sensors, electronics, and everything's pretty amazing. And, of course, flying fighter jets is sometimes just being able to go from down low to up high and to this place to that place pretty quick is pretty neat to be able to do that. And then I got to finish my career taking a little bit of a step back technology-wise in the A-10, which is a ground attack plane, which is slow and mean and tough, and it takes anybody on at any time. And so that was a whole unique experience in its own right. So a very wonderful time I've had being a fighter pilot and getting to serve and do that for the U.S. Air Force.
You're affectionately known as Odie. How did you get that name?
Well, that's what, you know, fighter pilot call signs, you know, the people about my age probably remember Top Gun, where you have Iceman and Goose and those types of call signs. And I end up with Odie, which literally is the cartoon character from Garfield's little dog. And when I was in the Arizona National Guard, Air National Guard, I was one of the youngest people as an instructor pilot there. So I had the job where they made me in charge of the briefing rooms, which was about in the prestige realm of about like being the janitor. And I did that for a number of years. And it was a little girl in the command post that said I was like the little dog that got kicked around all the time and never complained. And she looked at me one day and went, "Erf." And just like that, it stuck. So Odie became the call sign as the little dog that got kicked around and didn't complain.
The camaraderie in the military, whether it's the Navy, Air Force, Marines, Army, how do you explain that phenomenal camaraderie?
Well, a lot of it has to do with how we do our business, and I'll explain it from a fighter pilot perspective. We never go into combat by ourselves. And the, you know, the Army infantry would say the same thing. If you were ever by yourself, get low, get fast, get home. Survival's the best you're going to do. And in a fighter pilot, if you're flying along in an airplane, there's two places you can't even see. You can't see below your airplane and you can't see behind your airplane. So when you go into combat, you fly 1 to 2 miles right next to another airplane because they can see underneath your airplane. They can see behind your airplane. They can see places where you can't see. So we simply go into combat that way so that we can have our eyes open. It's a way that we can support one another. And I use that analogy when I explain what wingmanship is, which is really that art of mutual support, things that we can look out for one another, because the last person a lot of times who's going to know that there's a problem or an issue is going to be yourself. It's very hard for you to perceive. But for your wingman who's sitting over there, it's much easier for them to see those threats and everything to you than it is for you to see them to yourself.
We're talking to Brigadier General Doug Slocum. When we come back, we're going to ask him about our young American heroes, our military people today. And I'm Jack Rizzullo, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rizzullo, and we're with Brigadier General Doug Slocum, who served in the Air Force for 35 years, from 1984 to 2019, 35 years to the day.
You bet. 5 May 1984 was when I was commissioned. 5 May 2019 is when I retired to the day. Fantastic.
All right. Our young American heroes serving our country in the military today, tell us about them.
I'll tell you, the most amazing men and women you would probably ever want to meet, especially with our National Guard, which I've had a lot of experience with recently, because about 70% of the National Guard are citizen airmen. They're hometown heroes, people who are, and I don't like to use the term necessarily, part-time. They do other things full-time. They go to school. They have other jobs. They also have family. They have school. And they also serve their state and their nation. And they do this in a remarkable way out at Selfridge. Our average part-time employee probably spent over 100 days a year in service to their state or their nation. There's always somebody from Selfridge who is in what we call a Title 10 or a federal status or deployed. They're over there doing our state and our nation's business. In fact, as we're sitting here talking today, there's a large number of people from Selfridge who are over in the Middle East serving our country. And these are folks who've stepped away from jobs. These are employers who are supporting them. These are families who are living without their loved ones with them right now, as they are selflessly serving our state right now, doing some amazing work while they're overseas.
Doug, in 2014, you became the commander of the 127th Wing Selfridge Air National Guard Base. Describe Selfridge in 2014.
2014, when we showed up, I was hired from the outside to come into the organization. pretty chaotic. There was a lot of things that were going on. It was nice to be able to pick up and address some of the issues. An organization that was stressed, the operational tempo was very, very high. In other words, people were busy, people were tired. And so my job was to go in and revitalize. So it was to come in and give some energy, or what I like to say, it was an inject of violent positivity into the organization. So that was kind of my charter walking in. Selfridge is a unique organization in the fact that the Selfridge installation also has 45 tenant organizations out there. So there's not just the 127th Wing, which is our Air National Guard hometown heroes. There are a lot of other organizations out there that are government affiliated through all the different services, Homeland Security. A lot of different things go on out at Selfridge. And there's a dual-hatted role there, which is to be the commander of the installation as well as the commander of the 127th Wing itself.
How did you go about changing the culture?
Well, that's great. You heard me use the term violent positivity because that was the approach when I came in because there was a lot of stress. There was a lot of pressure. So my goal was to try and go in and always turn on a light, to pat people on the back, to high fives, to smiles, to encourage people along the way. A lot of times in an organization when we get stressed, we want to just say, work harder, work harder. Well, sometimes we just work smarter, we work better, there's a better way to do things. So my goal was to take a very positive approach with people, and they responded very, very well. The organization turned around very quickly, and within a couple of years, we're winning national awards for being one of the best organizations in the nation.
You've talked a lot about violent positivity, keys being start with names, be genuine, be humble, be a person of integrity. Okay, number four, value failure.
Oh, and that's such an awesome
one. I'm a Cubs fan. All right, for 108 years, we valued failure. Talk to us about valuing failure.
Which means you don't want to be a one-mistake organization. If you're ever going to get good at something, you've got to try it. You have to do something new. You have to do something for the first time. And every time you do that, you're going to stumble. You're going to fall. You're not going to do it well. So to be an organization or a person of success, look at anybody who's in the spotlight now and go back and look at their track record, and you're going to see that they have a trail of the times that they fell short, the times that they weren't able to live up to standards, the times that they were just beginning. And you'll see that it's the trail of failure that leads to success. So we have to realize that when people are stepping out, when they're trying, that that's a good thing. We want to encourage that. In a lot of organizations, you know, hey, we don't want to have anybody that fails. Well, that means you're not going to have anybody that's going to innovate. You're not going to have anybody that's going to try. So we want to revel in. We want to make sure that we learn from our mistakes, but understand mistakes are normal. Mistakes are okay. And that's a normal part of being a successful person or a successful organization.
All right, the fifth point, have a vision and tenaciously communicate it. Selfridge has 4,500 employees. As you stated, 70% of them are part-time, working about 100 days a year. How did you tenaciously keep communicating the vision to these people?
Well, one is, you know, vision is what's up over the horizon. I always like to point out that when you listen to politicians, when you listen to leaders, when you listen to a lot of folks in business, to me, one of the easiest ways to delineate and to identify successful people is, are they talking about today or are they talking about the future? Most successful leaders are talking about a future state and where we're going to go. So that's that vision that leaders are communicating. In other words, here's where we're going to go as an organization, and this is how we're going to get there. The tenaciously communicating it part to me is people listen in different ways. People learn in different ways. A challenge at Selfridge is there's never everybody together at one time that you can talk with. So you have to say that same message over and over and pick different communication medium. One of the, you know, social media, radio, we did videos every month that we would put out that I entitled, "And This Is What I Know Today," to give an update of what's happening. So it's just communicating. I have never been in an organization where people complained that they get talked to too much. You know, it's a lack of information. So talk, 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 tell the story, set that vision out there. And once again, it's a great way to set the path towards success.
Okay, Doug, Odie, I quote you now.
Okay.
My philosophy is that executive leadership is best exercised by an ask, don't task, and sell, don't tell approach.
And I love to talk about that, and I can phrase that even in a different way for you is, if you were in a leadership position and I took away your ability to reward people or to punish people, would they still want to follow you? Would they still want to see where that vision is that you're taking them? In other words, it's not about what incentive I can give you or what type of punishment I could put out there, the carrots or sticks. It's about being a dynamic type of person where people will share that vision that you're communicating, that they're going to want to team with you, that they're going to want to follow where you're leading in this particular case, that it's voluntary. The National Guard is kind of a unique organization in the fact that it's decentralized. It belongs to all of the individual states. So the ask, don't task, sell, don't tell philosophy kind of came from our national approach, which was these are independent organizations who can choose to follow us. So we can't just dictate what we want to do. We have to go out there and sell it. We have to want to get people to come aboard and make everybody voluntarily get on board with us to be successful.
Brigadier General, talk to us about TEAM, team.
Teamwork, getting people together. It's a lot of times we focus on successful people, individuals, and we can go back to, you know, you can. I love using sports analogies a lot of times. A lot of us remember the movie Moneyball, where they go out and talk about we don't need people who hit home runs. We need to get people who get on base. I talk about, you know, a football team. When we get everybody out there on the field, that everybody has individual roles and responsibilities on the team. They have to synchronize. They have different talents. They have different abilities. But what brings them all together is going to be the playbook and the coach, because that's going to set all of these synergies in place. It's going to have that talented quarterback throw the ball to the right receiver at the right time with the right blocking to allow the team to be successful. So when it comes to the teamwork side of things, we have to realize that diversity is a strength. You can think of it in that sports metaphor. But we want to bring all sorts of different people together, but bringing them together successfully is where that coaching, where that leadership, and where that playbook, if you will, comes in, which can be that strategic plan, that vision of where we're going in the future.
We're talking to Brigadier General Doug Slocum. When we come back, we're going to ask him to highlight a couple of those teammates. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and with Brigadier General Doug Slocum. From 2014 to 2019, he was the commander of the 127th Wing, Selfridge Air National Guard Base. Brigadier General, talk to us about two of these special teammates.
Well, as you talked about violent positivity, one of the pillars of that that I talk about is that how important words are, words that come out of your mouth. And I'm going to tell a couple quick stories, one of which is it ties back to social media. When Facebook first started, I was real reluctant to jump into that, a little skeptical. But I finally decided I was going to sign up for a Facebook account. I did that. It was about a week after I had done that I got my first ever Facebook message. And it popped up and it said, "Hello. My name is Tyler. You dated my mother when I was 4 years old." Okay, I had a short bit of panic when I realized, wait, Tyler's four at this point. I don't need to worry about anything here. But it actually started a dialogue and eventually exchanged a phone number and started talking with Tyler Downs. And I had met Tyler when he was 4 years old through a church group. I had met his mother, and we went out a few times. But I can remember talking with him. He was a little gruff-voiced kid with a bald head and always rubbed his head. But he'd contacted me on Facebook because he said he had just turned 18 years old, and he had just joined the United States Air Force. I said, "Well, now that's interesting, Tyler." And he says, "Well, I wanted to let you know I joined the Air Force because of you." I was like, "Well, how's that work? I mean, you were 4 years old." He goes, no, I remember very clearly." He goes, "You would come in your flight suit and you would talk to me about flying. You would talk to me about what you do every day." He goes, "And there was a book that you sat down and you would read to me from this book. And it was an encyclopedia of world military aircraft." He goes, "I want you to know that that book is sitting on my desk right here, right now in front of me while we're talking." And it was, to me, that story is so impactful because it talks about the power of words. I was talking to a four-year-old kid about what I did that affected his life. You know, when he turned 18 years old, he decided to join the Air Force because of an experience, some words he heard when he was 4 years old. So I tell people, never underestimate the power of your words, or sometimes how long it takes when you plant that seed for it to grow, for it to harvest, that you're going to be able to see the fruits of that. Think how powerful that, what a statement that is, that you can talk to somebody that young and that much later have an impact on their lives.
One other teammate.
Okay. One other, tying a little bit more recently, when I was the director of safety for the Air National Guard in Washington, D.C., it was kind of a phenomenon that the Guard in the past, from a safety perspective, used to crash a lot of airplanes and hurt a lot of people. But it changed through time. And it was, you know, as I was trying to do my studies to figure this all out, that to this day, the National Guard is actually very, very good at what we do. We're very safe, more than our peers in most cases. And when you look at this statistical anomaly that goes from being, if you will, twice as bad to being twice as good, I kind of was trying to figure out, why did this happen? And in my research on the internet, I was able to find out that there was somebody who had approached organizational culture and safety in a lot of the ways that I was trying to do at the time. In fact, the Marine Corps is using a program to this day that was started by this individual. When I found Colonel Groban, Dick Groban, and learned a little bit about what he had done, what he had started in the Air National Guard, looking at accountability, looking at organizational excellence, looking at core values and how to instill that in the organization, I decided I wanted to look him up. And it was amazing to me how difficult it is to find people if they don't want to be found on the internet. I finally did get his phone number and called him. He was living in Tucson, Arizona. And got him on the phone and explained. I said, the reason I'm calling you is because you understand you started a revolution. You've made a huge difference for an organization that's better, that now has saved lives, that is more efficient, all because of the work that you started decades ago. So we talked for a little while about it. And I said, hey, next time I'm in Tucson, I'd like to come see you and let's do a cup of coffee. And he said over the phone, he said, you better hurry up. I said, why is that? He said, well, I'm going to pass away in the next couple months. He goes, I've got a disease. I'm not going to be around. And at that point, I flipped the conversation over to be benevolent. I was like, you know, you did amazing work. You made a huge impact on the organization, on people. I want to thank you for everything that you've done. And it was just fantastic to be able to talk with him. So we were probably on the phone for a little over an hour. We hung up at that point, and I said, like, wow, that's just an amazing conversation. The next thing I heard was a couple months later, I got a phone call from his son. And he was telling me that, hey, needed to let you know that my dad did pass away. He goes, but I want you to know that for the last couple months, ever since that phone call, that's all he was able to talk about. He had no idea that his life had made that kind of difference in somebody in the organization and helping people out, giving that type of a feedback to people. It was amazing to hear him tell the story, but it's not over yet, because at this point, this is where the son actually said, hey, it made such a big difference in my dad's life. He actually invited me out to do the eulogy for his dad's funeral. So I traveled out to Arizona and I got to do a eulogy for a man who made a huge difference for the Air National Guard and for the U.S. Air Force. And it was a man who I'd never even met, but only had the opportunity to talk to on the telephone. So when I talk to leaders, I love to say, you have any idea how powerful your words are, how encouraging you can be to somebody by just lifting them up and making an impact in their lives. Telling them that they're doing a good job can make a huge difference.
We're talking to Brigadier General Doug Slocum, who also has made a huge difference for safety. From 2009 to 2013, he was the Director of Safety for the Air National Guard, and in 2013, he was inducted into the U.S. Air Force Safety Hall of Fame. 2017, the summer of 2017, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of Selfridge. What was that like?
100 years as a continually operating military airfield. Now, I'm a history buff, but to me, that's absolutely amazing. It's a history of Southeast Michigan, land donated by the Packard Motor Company by Henry Joy, that was swampland that was basically converted over to do pilot training in the First World War. And that's how it started. And 100 years later, it's still a military operating airfield and has been all through the different world wars, through all the downsizing. The history there is absolutely amazing of what's happened. As long as the history of our aviation, Selfridge has been part of that. So 100 years into it, hey, we thought we'd have a little bit of a party out there at Selfridge. So we had an air show. We timed our air show to correspond with that 100th anniversary. We did a lot of build-up events, engaging with the community, telling the story about Selfridge. And then in August of 2017, we invited about 235,000 of our closest friends out for a little party on the base, had the Air Force Thunderbirds, and boy, did we have a great time. And there were about 100,000 people out on Lake St. Clair and about 10,000 boats, too. I think you could have walked to Canada without getting your feet wet that weekend.
Speaking of anniversary, a month ago to the day, June 6th, 2019, we celebrated the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And Doug, you went to Normandy on June 6th, 2018 for the 74th anniversary. What was that like?
Oh, once again, back to history. Absolutely amazing. It was, in all my travels, it was my first opportunity to go to Normandy and to experience. The very first day we were there, before we even went to the hotel, we went out to Utah Beach and able to walk out there and to look at from the perspective, to stand out on the beach and look and think about the history that was happening at that point. I had the honor of speaking at probably five or six different events there in Normandy, getting to know some of the people. There was one event when I was there, that there were about 24, I believe it was, World War II veterans from D-Day present. And I tell you, that's quite a generation, some amazing people, but they're getting old. They really are. What a fantastic opportunity to talk with them. Heck, they were singing songs and having a good time, just the camaraderie between them as the band of brothers that they are. But then to share experience and to see some of that history, it wasn't that long ago that we were fighting for our freedoms and people were paying the extreme sacrifice there in Normandy.
Well, quite a while ago, 243 years ago, on July 4th, 1776, we were born, America. And here's a portion of our national anthem. When we come back, we're going to ask Brigadier General, what does he think about when he hears that song? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Odie, Brigadier General Doug Slocum. Doug, when you hear our national anthem, what do you think?
You know, 35 years in uniform, whenever I hear that, it elicits an emotional response out of me. I don't know how I can say it, but you know, when you hit some of those notes and everything, it always makes that hair stand up on the back of your neck. I think one of my favorite parts, though, is I always like to think of the last two lines of the national anthem as a question. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave? And I always like to answer that question. You're darn straight it does. And a lot of times it's because of the amazing men and women who've sacrificed, who've guarded that freedom. You know, the vision that we have as a country, guarding these principles, it just is amazing to me. It's an emotional thing. I've never gotten through, I don't think, the Star Spangled Banner without having some sort of a reaction to it.
You joined the military on May 5th, 1984. 35 years to the day, May 5th, 2019, you officially retire. And you give your team one final message in an email. Brigadier General, what was the final message?
Wow, there are a number of components to it, because it took me a while to think about what is it that I wanted to leave as sort of the last message, the last day that I was there, that I sent out. One is just thanking everybody for all the amazing hard work, but also to set where is that vision of where we're going in the future, that they have the opportunity to step up, to be the leaders, to have that vision, to take the organization to the next level, that we've just started a journey that we're going to continue as we go forward. There were a number of people that I wanted to individually thank. We have people who had worked for me, my direct staff out there. But we had some amazing community partners here in southeastern Michigan. When you look at some of the folks who were our wingmen, who were our battle buddies that allowed us to accomplish so much, I wanted to make sure I gave a great shout out to a lot of those individuals. But at the same time, I wanted to let folks know that, you know, nothing ended on the 5th of May also. That, as I said, I'm not going to be wearing the uniform anymore at this point, but that doesn't mean that I'm not going to continue to serve, that I took an oath to uphold and defend, and that I will never untake that oath.
And one of the ways that you're continuing to serve is helping out the Fisher House.
Yes, and that's a fantastic organization, Fisher House of Michigan, that I'm just getting involved with recently. Just broke ground on the first Fisher House in the state of Michigan in Ann Arbor near the VA hospital there, in fact, on the grounds of the VA hospital. But Fisher House is essentially an organization, think of it sort of like a Ronald McDonald House, but this is for veterans' families. So if there's a veteran who's going to the hospital, has to travel a distance, the family's displaced, they have a place essentially where they can go stay free of charge, right there next to their loved ones. It helps our veterans. It helps their families. It saves money. It is absolutely awesome what they're able to do. And the Fisher House Foundation essentially helps raise money, sets it up, gets them operating, turns the facilities over to the VA, and they're able to operate them. And there's about 84, 85 of them in the country now, and many more being constructed. And by golly, here in Michigan, we have a fantastic opportunity to help our veterans through what we're doing with the Fisher House. Ann Arbor is number one. Detroit is next on the list, and we're looking forward to breaking ground and cutting the ribbons there.
If you want to learn more, www.fisherhousemichigan.org. Jenny married you for better for rich, for richer for poorer, but not for lunch. So you've recently joined Sam Simon and the Simon Group.
Oh, and Sam and Netta Simon have been fantastic. I've had the opportunity to get to know them through their work with their foundation, through Selfridge, where they just love paying back to the military, to first responders, and to those who serve our state and our nation. They've held a Christmas party out at Selfridge every year for, I believe it's 13 years now, but I got to know them. When I figured out that I was going to retire, I had a conversation with Sam and what they do, and I just love the way that organization approaches business. I like their core values. I like the vision of where they're going. And he said, why don't you come on board with us and help us do what it is that we do? And so I'm a couple weeks into it now with the Simon Group. They do a lot of very interesting stuff, amazing people.
Name a couple of the major things that the Simon Group does.
Well, they're into Atlas Oil was the first company that Sam founded when he was 19 years old. An entrepreneur here in Detroit was able to step forward and to start a business that became the foundation. Atlas Oil then was able to expand out into a number of other enterprises in fuel and energy. And now they're expanding into real estate and lots of other enterprises here. But a great story of a fantastic businessman doing great things here in southeastern Michigan, now around the country and soon around the world.
He's a salesman, you know. He met this Netta when he was like 20 years old. And Netta was an assistant to an executive at Ford Motor Company. Great future. And he convinced her to leave Ford Motor Company, come work with him.
I think she made a pretty good choice.
And now he works for her.
Don't we all?
Amen.
Just like I work for my wonderful wife, Jen.
What's been the biggest adjustment, Doug, in these after 35 years in the military?
Wow. I would have to say, well, there's a number of things. Fashion would be one of them. For 35 years, I went and put on a green bag or some other type of a uniform and never had to think about it. So now I actually have to think about what I wear, as odd as that sounds. But really, the part and why I think I have a passion for veterans going forward is because that transition out of the military lifestyle into civilian, as much as you can prepare for it, I still think it's very, very difficult, even under the best of circumstances. I had 35 years. I had a lot of great teammates. But there's still a lot emotionally about that and stepping out of the military and into the public world that I think is very, very difficult. And I look forward to engaging through a number of veterans organizations to be able to help our servicemen to be able to transition into civilian life a lot smoother so that we can, one, take care of them, but also to make sure that they have the occupational skills, opportunities to be successful going forward. Hopefully relieve a lot of stress.
We lose 22 of our veterans a day to suicide.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a vet listening tonight that's in a bad way, contemplating ending it, mm-hmm. what do you say to him or her?
There's always help available to you out there. Just reach out. There are so many veterans organizations, way too many probably to even list right now. I did have the opportunity when I was in D.C. to run a national suicide prevention program called the Wingman Project, where we came up with an app where it was, you know, one button hit right now, where is the nearest help to me? Sort of tools. And around here, there are tons of organizations, Military One Source. If you're in the military, associated with the military, they have specific directors of psychological health. But you call any of them and they will make sure that they funnel you to the nearest best help. The big thing is ask. We can't do anything unless we know. And the way that we find out when people are under the stress is sometimes you either have to tell us or if we ask, you give us a direct answer to the question.
Brigadier General Odie, thanks for your 35 years of service and love to our country.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been an honor.
And best wishes in the newest chapter with Sam, Netta, and their entire team.
It's going to be amazing, Jack. Thank you so much.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoh.
Believe in yourself.